All right, good morning. On your chairs, you should have papers, and on those papers is a list of verses that we're going to be reading together. These verses they go well with some of the topics that you'll be hearing from some of the others later on today. So I think we're going to do this responsively. I will read the odd numbers, beginning with one, and then you all will read the even numbers. Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God.
Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and befriend faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart.
And those who know your name put their trust in you, for you, O Lord, have not forsaken those who seek you.
The Lord is my strength and my shield. In him my heart trusts, and I am helped. My heart exults, and with my song I give thanks to him.
For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope.
Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is in the Lord. He is like a tree planted by water that sends out its roots by the stream, and does not fear when heat comes, for its leaves remain green, and is not anxious in the year of drought, for it does not cease to bear fruit.
Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths.
You keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you, because he trusts in you.
It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in man.
Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus.
When I am afraid, I put my trust in you.
Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Also in me.
The fear of man lays a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is safe.
Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and befriend faithfulness.
The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble. He knows those who take refuge in him.
Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us, Selah.
Let me hear in the morning of your steadfast love, for in you I trust. Make me know the way I should go, for to you I lift up my soul.
He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust.
Behold, God is my salvation. I will trust and will not be afraid. For the Lord God is my strength and my song, and he has become my salvation.
When I am afraid, I put my trust in you, in God whose word I praise. In God I trust. I shall not be afraid. What can flesh do to me?
I'm sure you caught the theme in those verses, and it's the gift of being able to trust in a God who is completely capable of taking care of us. You know, behind every manipulating woman is a massive lack of trust and kind of a boatload of fear that God is not capable. From the beginning of time, it's been God's design that he would take care of us and that we would trust him to do that. But we as humans believe that we can do it much better, and so we manipulate. Can you hear very well back there? Raise your hand if you can't hear. Thank you. So we're born manipulators. No one has to teach us mad manipulation skills. Very quickly, as littles, we begin challenging our higher powers. As small toddlers, we ridiculously believe that our ideas are superior to those that are caring for us. And unless someone takes us very firmly in hand while we're still tiny and shows us that we're actually not in charge of our universe, we're adult narcissist victims waiting to happen, right? Today, parents seem to be reacting to what they believe was yesterday's hard-hearted parenting in which "I love you" was not verbalized, and children were not really allowed to express themselves. And it seems like people are feeling like they've been damaged by the parenting they've experienced. And I do not in any way mean to downplay nasty parenting. I know there is a thing like that, and I know there are scars. So don't hear me saying that that's not a thing. But what if love back in the day was shown instead of expressed? What if childhood restrictions make better adults? And what if surrender to God comes easier to a child who's been denied? Every child is unique, which means that parenting recipes will be unique. Hosea and I spent 3 years without children criticizing everyone else's parenting. It was great. That's what we did as we were getting ready to go to functions. So we had all the answers, and it was like God said, "Oh, okay. Try this baby." And he gave us our first little lion child. He came to us red-faced and scratched. I guess he was fighting with himself in the womb. He had me in tears before he was ever born. He kicked so viciously and so intense that in those first years, I honestly was so worried that he would never become surrendered. And I told Hosea one day, the child has no nerves in his backside. But those years were very intense. And now, ask my girls, we have several lion grandchildren whom are in the process of being tamed. So we completely understand that there are difficult children, more difficult than some. Our little lion was tamed through many, many grueling sessions in those first years and through my mom's encouragement. Bernice, don't give up. Just don't give up. My brother-in-law said to me one day, "Bernice, just be glad he's giving you the opportunity to clean him up while he's young." I didn't appreciate that at the time, but you know what? He was right. Those first years were hard, but after that, he gave us no issues. And Carissa can tell you he's a great dad, a sweet husband, and he follows and emulates the Lion of Judah. He's such a blessing. So don't give up. I am now that grandmother that sang, "Don't give up." I confess I did. He was our first child, and because we had had all the answers and were so critical, I placed lots of expectations on that first lion child. And once years later, I realized that I'd been parenting for the wrong motives. I was concerned that I had damaged him. And I talked to him about it. And he's taking responsibility for his own issues. So he takes ownership of the issues he faces. He could have said, "My mother ruined me," because she obviously parented out of wrong motives. We do need to parent with clean motives, with the child's well-being in mind, with patience, with gentleness. But hold it, girls. Don't you think the parenting pendulum has just swung nonsensically off the charts in some ways. It's gone from taming little lions to encouraging their growling and their roaring and their, get that rage out. I know. But does it take the sharpest knife in the drawer to understand that rage builds on rage? We've gone from becoming our child's authority to our child's peer. And now we feel compelled to explain every directive, like children cannot obey unless they fully understand why they should obey. So we find ourselves explaining many, many things to them, why we're asking them to do things. But stop and think about it. How many times do you find yourself moving forward in faithful obedience to a father, and you haven't the foggiest idea what he has up his sleeve, but you still obey, and you trust that he knows what he's doing? Explaining everything, I believe, could retard a child's ability to fully trust a father that he or she doesn't understand. Well-intentioned parents and grandparents, too. I really do find myself doing this. We're asking our toddler's permission for almost everything that happens. Shall we get up and get dressed? What do you want to wear? Oh, not that. This? Well, what then? Do you want granola or yogurt or toast? May Mama put your bib on? Shall we put you in the high chair? Can you wait here? Mama's gonna go change out the laundry. Can you wait, please? Shall we go to Grandma's? Is it time to go? Are you ready to go home? We ask their permission for so many things, and then when they say, no thanks, we're like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to punish you for this. But I get it. We are just trying to model sweetness, respectful tones, and gentleness. But I would like to challenge you to try something different. And let's be honest. The other thing that's happening is we're also hoping with all of our quaking little hearts to avoid a tantrum. You know the drill. Huge enthusiasm in our voices as we try to sell our directives to our toddlers. Sweetheart, come sit over here beside Uncle. Now, I want to sit here. But sweetheart, you'll be closer to Grandpa. Now, I want to sit here. But sweetheart, see how the sun shines in on this chair. And when you get another now, you rearrange your seating to accommodate sweetheart. Mamas, listen, the way to raise an entitled and anxious child is to let them orchestrate their own little world. Asking permission and giving in tells the child that it's really her job. Other people are there to make it happen for her. Other people are in the world to make your child's happiness happen and to make her wishes become fulfilled. The problem with this is that her little shoulders, I mean, measure them sometime, they are not big enough to carry this responsibility. They're simply not. And so what we don't realize is happening is because they feel this burden, they don't even understand what's happening. It causes them to be anxious and unhappy. Because what if they're missing something? It's a big burden. And we place it on them instead of removing that and taking that burden on our shoulders. The other problem is that other people fail to see their responsibility to provide her happiness. So it's just a bad situation. If you want, though, a secure and happy child, just go ahead and establish your very loving, very kind, affectionate authority. Tell her what is going to happen next. Tell her where she's going to sit, what she's going to wear. Tell her and free her of that burden of control. You'll be astonished how much happier and relaxed she is. And I hope you understand that I'm talking about a lot of love, a lot of affection, as we very matter-of-factly tell them how their world is going to turn, and then we smilingly stick to our guns, our common sense guns. One of my biggest parenting mistakes has been just getting my emotions involved as I parent and when my children disobeyed. I subconsciously thought, how can this child do this to me? I'm his mother. What is this? Especially as they get older, I think, that's how much you love me? That's how much you care? How can you do this to me? Hosea said to me one time, Bernice, there is nothing really wrong with him. It's just that he's 15. He was careless and forgetful and didn't remember to do what I told him to do, but he wasn't actually rebellious. And yet I was emotionally involved. I was hurt, and so I reacted to him, even though he wasn't trying to injure me. A foolish woman, as Proverbs said, tears down her house with her own hands. And I think that happens when we let our emotions get involved as we parent. And as you parent, someone told me something one time that really helped me. And they said, when you tell a child who has done something you don't like, when you say, that was not very smart, you're appealing to your child's intellect. But when you say, honey, don't you know how this hurts mama? You're appealing to their emotions. When you say, sweetheart, what do you think God thinks about what you just did? Now you're appealing to their spirit, where their conscience is, and where they connect with all things God. So let me encourage you to do that a lot more than I did when I was raising my children. Emotions are such a beautiful gift. But Proverbs says that a man who hath no control over his emotions is like a city that is broken down and without walls. Influencer parents today are really celebrating children's emotions, everyone's emotions. The good, the bad, and especially the ugly. You will hear them say, I know you're angry, and that's okay. Mama gets angry too. Get it all out. Look at me. Look at me. Breathe. Breathe with me. Can you breathe? Breathe in. Breathe out. That's it. Get it out. Are you good? May Mama pick you up now? And it's probably on the floor at Walmart when it's happening. Emotions must all be expressed. And I read one account that said, if it's not at least 2 times a week with very loud crying, you should be alarmed. There could be permanent damage going on. Otherwise, intelligent parents find themselves super humiliated and manipulated, suffering through huge, ugly tantrums in public. And you just think, manipulation madness. I'm sharing the aisle at Lowe's with a mom who was imploring her little boy in the cart to sit down. Please sit down, honey. Can you sit down, please? Honey, you're gonna get hurt. Can you please sit down? Sit down, honey. I just went on and on. And suddenly he accidentally lost his balance and plopped down. And then it was, oh, I'm so sorry. Are you hurt? Oh, let me see where you're hurt. Are you hurt? And he's howling. He's not hurt. But no dots were connected for that child. Cause and effect? None were connected. The only dots that were connected were that I am a victim. I am a victim of Lowe's. I am a victim of this cart, this moving cart. I am a victim of my mother who won't let me stand. I am a victim of gravity itself. So I feel quite sure that this mother was doing the best that she knew how. I also feel quite sure that this mother was hopeful that one day her child would grow up to be a positive influence on the world. But this, if this child continues to be a victim of everyone and everything, maybe he could grow up to assassinate someone who is declaring truths that make him feel badly. And he doesn't want to feel badly. I know, public drama happens to the best of parents. Ask us here, this very crew. We have little lions. So just because someone is having public drama doesn't mean that they're not doing their homework at home. It happens. Hopefully it just doesn't happen over and over and over. My brother, Brian, hated church when he was little. And mom took him out and spanked him. Went back in, he fussed. She took him out, spanked him again. Went back in, he fussed. I don't know how many times it happened. Do you know, Kathy? And finally, she took him out and she didn't know what else to do. Spanking, I guess he didn't, he must not have nerves in his backside either. But she sat him down and burst into tears. And so did he. Only they were different tears. So that time the emotions really worked out. But she didn't give up. That's my point. And they went back in and he was a good child for the rest of the service. But honestly, don't fall for what you read on Instagram, because you might end up missing spiritual food Sunday after Sunday as your sweetheart disrupts the service with emotions that need to come out. You know what really inflicts harm is the Instagram way. It not only harms the child, it harms our schools, our churches, our service units, our society. When everyone feels entitled, leaders can't lead, and everything is everyone else's fault. We've gone from a society who celebrates heroes that have suffered and sacrificed, and we admire them, to a society that celebrates victims. Victims who insist on their rights at the expense of other people. So if we're going to raise a generation of adults who are responsible for their own sins and actions and who find joy in serving others, Let's establish our loving authority over our little humans. Establish that life does not revolve around them, that life is hard, and then you die. Life is good, too. Really good. But only when you get your eyes off of your own desires and onto what you can do for others. Life is good when you lay it down for God and other people. So how you parent, Mom, determines whether your child, as an adult, will easily be happy in relationships, know how to suffer well, or be a victim, whether she will repel people or be magnetic and draw people toward her, whether she'll be able to trust a higher power or manipulate madly, and most importantly, whether she will be glorifying God or shaming his name. It goes without saying that if you've parented badly or have been parented badly, God's redemption and power is absolutely able to rise us above our own victim and entitlement mentality. It's just going to be harder. Also goes without saying that when we've had good parents who loved us well and equipped us by making us secure with loving discipline, it's a lot easier. Little women grow up to be big women. Mothers, teachers, employees, and honestly, we need all the help we can get because, say amen, we are inherently tempted to manipulate. A friend was telling me how she was so concerned about a situation, and she got herself into hot water trouble because she ran ahead of her husband's plans to take care of the situation. She didn't mean to, but all of a sudden she found herself doing it, and she was telling me about it, and she said, "But why? Why does it take men so long to do something?" And I said, "I know. Why? Because it's just as hard for men to lead as it is for women to submit. We tend to think that the only reason men don't lead is because women are too aggressive. But Adam, standing passively by as Satan manipulated Eve and then accepted Eve's manipulation like a good little boy, and then blaming God and Eve for what he did. Hey, was he the first victim mentality guy? That was just as much of a sin. So neither Adam nor Eve trusted God enough to say, "Oh, I know God's got this." But the sin of the male species is not going to be our focus today. What is actually happening right now as we move into this next piece is that I'm giving my daughter Leah, who's going to be married in a few weeks, her premarital counseling, and the rest of you get to listen in. You're welcome, Leah. If you have read the books, The Surrendered Woman or The Empowered Wife, The Surrendered Wife or The Empowered Wife by Laura Doyle, you're going to recognize a lot that I'm borrowing a lot from these books. I've really been inspired by them. And so, yes, we could talk about Adam's sin, and we do like to talk sometimes about our husband's issues. We get so consumed with how our husbands are showing up that we neglect our own showing up. Our own coloring pages are becoming scribbled, ugly pictures completely outside the lines because we're just looking at someone else's page, madly manipulating. Our hand on his hand, obsessing about him staying within the lines that we draw. And when our husbands react by shutting down or avoiding us, we begin to run these grooves through our brains that say, seriously, he must not cherish me if that's how he acts. If he would love me, he would use the colors I want and stay within the lines that I draw. I've been watching Leah and Alex, and courtship is a lovely, lovely thing. Both he and she rise above their sinful tendencies. He leads with chivalry and makes her feel cherished. She shows him how happy she is, and it's his fault. She's all feminine and basking in being cared for and following his lead. Y'all, they forgive each other astonishing things. And then we live together, and we begin to fall into our natural patterns. He begins to relax his leading and protecting. She begins to help him with many small things. Don't you think, honey, shouldn't we? Well, what about? Are we going to? You should. Why don't you? Why did you? Why didn't you? And we obsess about his devotional life, how he leads the family spiritually, how often he brushes his teeth, and so many things. Then finances become a reality. Other people's expectations, our own expectations press in. Babies arrive, and so do a volley of stresses. The Mother Eve instinct kicks in, and our brains say, if I don't take care of this, we are going to have a mess, boys. Manipulation madness. Some of our tactics include pouting, silent treatments, guilt trips, crying, denying or rewarding the gift of intimacy, backing away, building emotional walls. It's all very subconscious and all very gradual. We have no idea what we're doing. At least I didn't. Slowly but surely, we stop respecting our husbands and start questioning whether they can actually do what they need to do without us advising them on many accounts. But respect is the oxygen that your man breathes. And as it starts getting less and less, and then actually cut off, he reacts. His oxygen is so low that he's having a really hard time cherishing his wife. And that's a big problem, because being cherished is the oxygen that we breathe. But because we don't realize that we've changed ever so gradually from the happy, adoring, respecting girlfriend to the stressed out, worried, manipulating wife, we just think that somehow he's gradually turned into a jerk. And we can't understand what got into him. I mean, this is not the man we married. We don't even realize we've been cutting off his air supply. We've unwittingly become his mother. And no husband is romantically attracted to his mother. When Hosea married me, he didn't do it so that I could take charge of him. He married me to take care of me, to protect me. And certainly, it helped that I respected and admired him a lot. But then I began to feel fearful. Remember, fear is the source of all of this. And feel like I need to help him color his page so that everything according to my perspective turns out right. He began to feel frustrated. And also, as men tend to do, He let me lead in some areas. Remember, it's easy for them to turn it over. All right, you wanted honey? Sure. We're just helping, right? But put yourself into your respect-breathing husband's shoes. How would you like to drive down the road listening to, stop sign, honey. This is where you turn. Here's the parking spot. This route will be short. Why didn't we go this route? It would be shorter. Or also, how would it feel to our men to be, how does it feel to our men to be corrected in conversation? Who in the world besides you cares if the story happened on a Tuesday or a Thursday? Let them talk. It doesn't matter. So because of our sinful tendencies, our husbands often feel disrespected. Because of their sinful tendencies, we often feel neglected. And when our husbands are too distracted or busy or just don't meet our wants or sometimes our actual needs, and when it takes them so long to do something, we feel hurt and frustrated. And then here's another temptation. In order to avoid hurt, we stop telling them what we need. And we just pull up our big girl britches and say, I will take care of this myself. Don't do that. We begin to make decisions without asking him, taking over things that he normally would do because he just doesn't get around to it. And then, boy, oh boy, the resentment that builds within our own hearts, it's not good. So we could go on about the many ways we destroy our relationships, but let's just talk about some practical skills to bring back or keep the joy in our relationships. This is the good kind of manipulation where you manipulate your hand away from his messy coloring page and start cleaning up the mess on your own. I challenge you to take these skills. Don't even tell your husband that you're doing it. Just start practicing them and see what happens. The first one I have down is apologize to your husband if you see this in yourself, for disrespecting him and being critical, manipulating, controlling, for being too focused on his page instead of taking care of your own. And then relinquish control. We haven't been called to manipulate others, not even our husbands. We were meant to trust God, and we were meant to trust our husbands. We argue that we have so much turmoil and stress and depression, and we can't help it. But maybe we can. Maybe we can help a lot of it by letting go and trusting. Saying, let him, or let them, is the opposite of manipulation madness. Does it annoy you that he falls asleep on his recliner instead of coming to bed when you go? It's incredibly freeing to say, it's not my coloring page, it's his. Let him. You can apply this to any relationship and lots of issues. Why should we stoop to letting others steal our peace? The next one is respect his thinking. My favorite tool to combat manipulation is to say repeatedly and out loud to myself, girl, you don't know everything. You just flat don't know everything. It's very possible he's right and I'm wrong. God is big enough to work through my husband so I can relax and respect. This means when I hear him voicing his thoughts, I can say, I hear you. And then I apply duct tape to any comeback that threatens his his leadership or his anything that sounds disrespectful, just duct tape. Also, receive from him graciously and express gratitude. When we are needlessly anxious and in turmoil about many things, and the husband does something sweet for us, a lot of times it goes straight over our heads, doesn't even register because we're so busy being in turmoil. Or we think, well, duh, that's his job. Goes right over our heads. Or we might say, oh, you shouldn't have done that. We can't afford it. And we discourage his generosity. Don't do that. Even if you don't like it and you don't know what you're going to do with it, thank him profusely. Here's one that I learned recently, and I love it. Express your desires in a way that inspires. Girls, husbands do not know what to do with hints and subtle references. Leah, get this. To be kind is to be clear. Be direct about what you want, but say it in a way that inspires. Instead of every few weeks saying, oh, I'm so embarrassed with the mildew on our siding. That's a complaint that puts pressure on him. Well, are you asking me to do something about, or I see you're unhappy about that. Yeah. Instead of saying that, say, honey, I would love to have the mildew washed from our siding, especially before Leah's wedding. but when you say, I would love, it's expressed in a way that invites action from him. So express it in a way, express your desire in a way that inspires, but then let it go. He may or may not take your invitation. Be vulnerable. This is the opposite of being defensive. I find it so super hard when I'm feeling uncherished and when I'm feeling annoyed to be vulnerable and not defensive. Because when you have a discussion and you don't like what he's saying, you just want to defend. You just want to come out on top. Be vulnerable, and when he says something hurtful, does something hurtful, you can say, ouch, and walk out of the room. He'll probably find you. Jesus asks us to learn of his meekness and lowliness, and then rely on him to handle or lead in family finances and other situations. There's nothing that makes us so motherish and unattractive as when we grab a hold of things that we shouldn't. Remind yourself often that he's capable. He's smart. That's why you married him. Because you knew that he could take care of you. Then voice your confidence in him. We tend to respond to what others believe about us. We really do. So instead of voicing negative things to your man, thank him for the way that he loves spending time with the family. You know, when you're feeling like he's not home enough, thank him for the way that you know that he loves spending time with his family. You might have to stretch the truth sometimes, but find ways that you can affirm him and thank him when you see the smallest hint of what you'd love for him to do more. Pounce on it and pump it up and let him know that you love it. They will respond to what you believe of them. They rise to our expectations. Life and power. Life and death are in the power of the tongue, and we forget that. So God designed men to thrive on seeing those in their care happy. Even though men like to see you happy, being happy is a choice that you make. Focus on showing up happy and grateful. This might mean that you spend more time on your spiritual, emotional, and physical well-being. And I know a lot of us say, are you kidding? I'm so fortunate if I can go to the bathroom in peace. How do I spend more time? But maybe you need to. Maybe if you knew that it would enhance your relationship and make you show up with a better coloring page, would you do it? I think you would. It's happiness. Happiness is what drew Hosea to me when we were dating. I was happy, and he believed that he was the reason. Years later, he told me, honey, when you're not happy, I feel like I've failed. And I felt really confused when he said that, because I wasn't happy at the time, and kind of for a long time, I wasn't happy. But it wasn't something that he was doing. It was another relationship that was getting me down. And so I was blue at home. I was blue around him. And he said, I said, but it's not what you did. And he said, I know, but my happiness to Hosea is his responsibility. And he feels successful when I'm joyful and singing and grateful. So, entitled manipulating little girls grow up to be entitled manipulating women who depend on others to make them happy, and it doesn't work. Just let's remember that no husband or other human has the capacity to manufacture happiness for another human. You and I are responsible for our own happiness. We are all so much happier when we trust a higher power, we look to a higher power to orchestrate our circumstances, when instead of manipulating, we release our loved ones to a higher power, when we walk trusting and obeying, hey, there's no other way to be happy in Jesus. When we walk with the Lord in the light of His Word, what a glory He sheds on our way. He sheds glory. Not a shadow can rise, not a cloud in the skies. He's smiling on you.
Drives it away.
Not a doubt nor a fear, not a sigh nor